Hi, this is Dr. Mike Chupp, and this is CMDA Matters, the weekly podcast of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. On this final week of February, my guest this week is Dr. John David Gordon, who for 20 years was consistently voted as one of Washington, D.C.'s top doctors in the Washingtonian, Northern Virginia, and Arlington magazines before some soul-searching by Dr. Gordon and his wife, coupled with an advertisement from the CMDA Placement Services, led him down a path to become a co-director of the National Embryo Donation Center in Knoxville, Tennessee in 2019. Dr. Gordon is the author of many scientific articles and several books, but he is probably best known to healthcare professionals as the editor-in-chief of Obstetrics, Gynecology, and Infertility, which is a best-selling handbook with over 150,000 copies in print that is used worldwide by medical students, residents, physicians, and women's healthcare professionals. Dr. Gordon is also the co-author of the patient-friendly and informative book called 100 Questions and Answers About Infertility, now in its second edition. Well, I invite you to listen in as Dr. Jeff Barrows and I discuss a significant course change by Dr. Gordon that involved an Old Testament reference to baby Moses in a basket as a small hinge that helped open a huge door of opportunity in Dr. Gordon's life. Well, it is indeed a pleasure to invite today to CMDA Matters Dr. John Gordon, who works at the National Embryo Donation Center as a physician and is co-director of Southeastern Fertility. He was born and raised in suburban Boston, where he attended Milton Academy. He matriculated through Princeton University and graduated summa cum laude with a degree in biology. After undergrad, he went to medical school at Duke and did a couple of places, his OBGYN residency, including the University of Texas Health Sciences in Houston, and then did his full residency in OBGYN at Stanford. He finished up with a fellowship in reproductive endocrinology and infertility at the University of California, San Francisco. Of course, Dr. Gordon is board certified in obstetrics and gynecology and has a subspecialty board certification in reproductive endocrinology and infertility. Welcome today, Dr. Gordon, to the program, and welcome to Dr. Barrows, our Senior Vice President of Bioethics and Public Policy.
Well, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Great to be here as well, Mike.
Dr. Gordon, why don't you tell our listeners about how God led you from our nation's capital to Knoxville, Tennessee, to help couples get pregnant?
As you had mentioned, I trained in reproductive endocrinology, and after being in practice in Long Island for 3 years, we moved to Washington, D.C. in 1999. For the next 20 years, I was co-director at the large fertility practice in the D.C. suburbs with multiple offices, performing about 1,500 cycles of assisted reproductive technology procedures every year. And over time, it seemed to me that my job shifted. And what had seemed to be a pretty straightforward role in terms of helping a couple accomplish a goal that they so desperately sought after, that is getting pregnant and having a child, it had morphed into something very different. I found myself more and more uncomfortable with some of the decisions we were making and what I was called to do. And I couldn't really put a finger on what exactly was bothering me or really what I should do about it. And then in February of 2018, my wife was laid up at home and she was noodling around on the internet. She had broken her ankle and spent a lot of time in contemplation and prayer and in scripture. And I came home one day and she said, "I'm not sure that what you're doing is the right thing that you should be doing." And I said, "Well, okay, we have a life here. We've worked very hard to raise our four children and I've worked hard to build my practice. Tell me, what are you talking about?" And at the time, of course, actually took me about 10 minutes for my blood pressure to come down so I could actually enunciate that. And she said, "Well, you know, I read about these freezer failures that occurred in Ohio and in San Francisco with hundreds of eggs and embryos that were destroyed. And I see this happy story about this child that was born after it had been frozen as an embryo for 20 years and how there are all these embryos around the country. Is that something that's a problem at your clinic? And I said, oh yeah, it's a real problem. I mean, we have so many frozen embryos that are even abandoned, where patients have created these embryos and then felt so conflicted they didn't know what to do with them. And she said, well, what are you doing about this? And I kind of looked at her and said, well, I don't know. What do you mean? She said, well, you know, you are a Princeton, Duke, Stanford educated physician. You need to be doing something about this. I mean, it's a terrible thing. I mean, think about what you are doing on a day-to-day basis. It doesn't sound like you're fixing the problem. It sounds like you're making the problem worse. And I thought about it. I said, well, that's a fair criticism. So I went on a journey of discovery just to kind of explore that, to say, well, what are we doing in our field? How do we get to this point where we have at least 1.4 million frozen embryos around the United States, and no one's really sure of the number? It's estimated that it probably goes up by 18% a year, however. Mm. And what are we doing about this issue, and how do we get our head around it? And I read a lot of ethical discourses regarding the fate of frozen embryos and the possibility of couples adopting these embryos and then having them transferred, or how do we prevent so many embryos from being created, and spoke to a wide variety of bioethicists about this, ranging from Robert George at Princeton, Gil Melander at, he's at Valparaiso, and Father Peter Ryan, who's an ethicist who'd written in Catholic Bioethics Quarterly. And when I spoke to Father Ryan on the phone, he said, John, let me give you an allegory of what you're doing. He said, it's a beautiful day. You're at the banks of a river. It's sunny and you're just enjoying life. And you look up and there's this basket floating down the river. And you say, well, that's odd. I wonder what's in the basket. So you wade out into the waters and there's a baby in the basket. You say, oh my goodness. So you bring the basket back to shore and you turn around and there's two more baskets floating down the river. This is a very Old Testament allegory.
Yeah.
So you wade out into the water, John, and you get these other baskets and you bring them back. And then you turn and you look upriver, and upriver you see from riverbank to riverbank a wall of babies and baskets floating down towards you. So that's what you have created in the field of reproductive medicine. All these babies in baskets desperately needing to be rescued. So I said, well, that's a powerful allegory. And in our field, we really hadn't addressed it. So I reached out to Jeff Keenan here in Knoxville. I'd found Jeff's name through the CMDA website. Actually, I'd Googled Christian IVF and just curious to see, you know, how do I, as a follower of Christ, how do I reconcile my day-to-day work with my belief? And reached out to Jeff, and Jeff called me back shortly thereafter, and he said, well, I've been looking for somebody to come down here to Knoxville, John, and join me here to work with the NADC and do these embryo adoption cycles. So why don't you just pick up and move down here to Knoxville? I thought, well, thanks. You know, we talked for a bit. And he said, well, if you don't want to come, if you can't come here now, maybe you come here later, but maybe you could serve as, say, an affiliate clinic, and maybe we could work together even if you don't move down here to Knoxville. I said, okay, well, let me talk to my wife about it. And so that night we went out, we dropped our daughter off at an event. And I said, I just want to tell you about this strange conversation I had. And so I said, I talked to this guy in Knoxville, Tennessee, and he does the embryo adoption, embryo donation center. And he thinks we should come down and move to Knoxville. And she started sobbing. And at that point I was crying. She said, that's what we're meant to be. We're meant to go. That is what we need to do. We need to go there. And I talked to my partner in D.C., and we talked about the situation. I said, I'm just really struggling with what we're doing. I think that the approach we're taking, I feel, is problematic. And he said, but it's so effective. I go, that may be, but I just don't know that it's right. And this had to do with genetic testing of embryos, with some of the ways in which we were practicing. And I said, I think that I I would like to work with this group in Knoxville. And we talked about trying to set up something. And in short order, I was told by the accountant and the attorney at the practice that your faith is really not consistent with remaining in the practice. And if you're really uncomfortable, then take all of your salary and just give it to charity and just work for free. And I said, well, I think I know a place where my faith would not be inconsistent with the approach that is being taken by the clinic. And I called up Jeff and I said, I know we talked about maybe a 2-year horizon, Jeff. This was April of 2019. So about not even a year since I had first reached out to Jeff, or just over a year. And I said, how do you feel about me coming in 2 months? So we made this big leap, and I really changed the approach that I was taking in terms of how I was practicing.
Well, John, I think many of our listeners would be curious, not just about the process for embryo adoption, but, you know, how similar is it to the regular process of adopting a child? Do you have interviews? Do you engage in home visits, applications? How does it all work?
So the NADC is a nonprofit. They function then in that matching realm. And so what happens is that all patients have to undergo a home study, and there are background checks. And as a result, they have to meet certain criteria, both medical and physical. So in other words, there's issues in terms of their combined ages, the age of the woman, and also BMI, general health, married for 3 years, normal life expectancy over the next 10 years, some of those issues. And then for those that are open, there's actually a open donor agreement that is negotiated with one of our counselors. And basically the couples work through how much contact will there be. It may be very minimal contact. It may be very open. And there are several families in NADC whose children look upon each other as cousins, even though they're full siblings, and the families have gone on trips together and vacation together. And it's sort of an unusual extended family. So I think that it's really a wide range. Most are open. And I think what I tell my patients is you can't pursue embryo adoption if you don't have a heart for traditional adoption. And I think that the term for adoption, I think, is valid in that you are raising a child who you are not genetically related to. And the child that did come from another family, a family that had originally created the embryos. Jeff and the NADC, there have been some criticism saying, well, it's not really legally adoption because you really can't adopt an embryo. It really is governed by property laws. But I think if you don't think of it in this way, then I don't see how a couple can pursue this, because you are raising a child that did not come from your eggs and your sperm. And although you get to be pregnant, which is wonderful, it's definitely not a traditional path to parenting. And some couples who are considering it will elect instead to pursue perhaps donor egg and husband's sperm, or wife's egg and husband's sperm, in doing other treatments.
Well, John, I read some very powerful testimonies, some stories from your website, embryodonation.org. And I know that you're up, as of today, to 1,025 babies born at the NADC. Also heard not too long ago that you had, maybe you've had more than one baby born in which the embryo was older than the mom who carried the baby. So tell us a story that sticks out to you as pretty remarkable.
Well, of course, Jeff was on the Today Show and in amazing array of media outlets talking about the birth of Molly Gibson. The Gibsons are a lovely couple, and it was their older child, Emma, that my wife had seen the story about back in that ill-fated time on the couch when she broke her ankle. And Emma had been frozen for 20 years that, or 24 years at the time. Mom was 25 years old. So the adopting mom was just a little bit older than Axel, than Emma, who had been frozen as an embryo for all those years. And then they came back through to do it again, and embryos that were from the same group of embryos, the last embryos that were from that group were thawed, transferred, and the Gibsons had success again, resulting in the birth of Molly. So now they have these two beautiful girls who had been together frozen in liquid nitrogen for over 20 years. Molly, 27 years, that's a world record in terms of the length of an embryo being stored before resulting in a healthy outcome. And to me, that story is just emblematic of why I wanted to be here and work with Jeff in the ANDC, because when we look at embryo adoption or embryo donation, it can be fraught with moral peril. I mean, if you turn embryos into commodities that can be bought and sold and swapped online, I think that is the antithesis of what I was hoping to pursue when I made a change in my career.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's dangerous. And so at times you'd hear about clinics where patient would donate 8 embryos and the doctor said, okay, this couple gets 2, she gets 2, they get 3, they get 1. And you're just like giving away puppies from a litter. And I thought, oh, that is just absolutely not what I want to participate in. So the idea here that the Gibsons would adopt this group of embryos, that they would be responsible for that group of embryos and hopefully use all of them to have a family so that these embryos would remain as siblings instead of sort of partitioning them out among willing recipients, I think is very important. And to me, that's just a wonderful aspect of that story.
It brings up the question, John, what is the success rate for embryo transfer there in Knoxville for you all?
So it's quite high relative to other treatments. And one of the reasons is we have these embryos because the couples were, for the most part, very successful. I mean, if they had not had success, they would have continued to use these embryos. So we're already in a unique group of embryos that have been donated, right? The reason we have them is because they were successful. So that puts them in a high probability of success compared to other fertility treatments. They tend to be from younger individuals because the older individuals tend to use up their embryos because they didn't make as many to begin with. So again, that usually results in a higher success rate. So we're looking at somewhere between 40 to 60% per embryo transfer, which is pretty much at the top of where you're going to find most fertility treatments, you know, probably on par with couples using donor egg. And some of the embryos that patients adopt have actually been created using donor egg. And, you know, we try to encourage patients to throttle back on how many embryos they transfer. I need to work on my messaging because inevitably I'll talk about single embryo transfer and encourage patients to do single embryo transfer and how important it is to do single embryo transfer. And then we'll get the paperwork back when I ask them, well, how many embryos are you thinking about transferring? And they'll circle 3 or 4. And I was like, okay, which part of single wasn't clear when we talked about single embryo transfer? But I mean, one of the problems is that we are victims of our own success because the complications with twin and triple pregnancies are clearly much higher than with singletons. And we really are not out there looking for twins and triplets. I mean, I always tell patients, if you get identical twins, God wants you to have twins. Okay? I cannot be blamed for that one. Cannot put in less than one embryo. So I put in 1 and you get 2, it's not on me. And the other thing is that we are a no discard facility. So we will not throw out or discard any viable embryos. So if the embryos are frozen, 3 in a vial, then if we thaw out 3 and they all survive, then it's either transfer all 3 in most cases or consider refreezing. But we know refreezing is not ideal. So if we refreeze, we're going to have to pick the most healthy looking embryo of the group because it would have the best chance of surviving being frozen again. But that's not an ideal situation. So again, sometimes we're sort of stuck because these embryos come from all over the country. And a lot of clinics just don't want to deal with this. I mean, they don't want to deal with embryos being shipped in from other clinics. The embryologists are comfortable with their own protocols as to how you thaw and freeze embryos, and to have to use protocols that come from other clinics or protocols that they weren't used to, or devices that the embryos are frozen that they weren't used to, is just not anything they want to hassle with.
So how many do you receive every week, Dr. Gordon, from all over the country? How many embryos?
Well, right now we're limited in terms of what we can receive because we've sort of maxed out in terms of our storage. So now we can't accept more embryos until we're clear out some space in terms of using the embryos for transfer. So those embryos that are after the Gibson story aired, I think we got contacted by I think over 120 couples who wanted to donate additional embryos.
So how many do you have in storage right now then?
Currently is over 4,000 embryos here in storage.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So when I came to join Jeff, we were able to really increase the number of transfers. So the NADC started with their first transfer here at Southeastern in 2003, and it went up slowly over the first 5 or 10 years, and then really started to catch fire and went to 80, 100, 110. And then last year we did almost 200 transfers. When you look at the country, there's about 200,000 ART procedures a year in this country. Okay. Hmm. And of those, only about 2,000 are embryo adoption, embryo transfers.
Yeah.
And of those 2,000, 10% are done here. So there's over 560 odd other IVF programs, many of them just not doing any embryo donation, embryo adoption cycles.
Well, Dr. Gordon, I want to thank you for being with us today. Certainly CMDA is with you. Dr. Stevens, Dr. Keenan together dreamed about this, and we've seen it now, I guess, 17 or 18 years. I believe that we've had a senior level CMDA leader on your board for some time now. Currently, that would be our Chief Operating Officer Jamie Campbell is there on your board. And so you can be guaranteed of our prayers. Is there any admonition that you'd want to leave to fellow OBGYNs out there or even maybe a couple of reproductive endocrinologists who are listening? You need more help there in Knoxville, I'm guessing.
We do. I mean, I think there are a lot of people who, and they may not even be patients of truly of faith, but they're uncomfortable with the way things are practiced, and I think they really relish in at least having these discussions and working through them. And I think that we owe it to them to have those discussions. I mean, that's part of what it is to be a physician, to do no harm, to do no harm to those patients or to those who are gamete donors or to those who are embryo donors or to the embryos themselves. And I guess I'd leave you with, one of my favorite jokes, which was, what is the difference between God and a reproductive endocrinologist?
Oh, we can't wait to hear.
And the answer is, at least God knows that he is not a reproductive endocrinologist.
Well, John, as an OBGYN, I just want to thank you for the terrific work you're doing there in Knoxville, and allowing us as OBGYNs to have a place to refer patients to that want to do embryo adoption. So I just am so thankful for the work that you're doing.
Well, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. And we appreciate the support of CMDA. And also just what a great partnership from the beginning to even create the NEDC. I mean, one of the reasons that we've been able to do so many cycles is really because of the work that the nonprofit does in performing the matching services. And that's why most clinics are really not able to offer embryo adoption, embryo donation on this scale. And really that partnership has really just yielded amazing fruit. I mean, it really has.
Well, Dr. Gordon, thank you. And I want to encourage our listeners, you can go to embryodonation.org, a great website, and you'll see their baby counter there, as well as you can go to a page, drop down multiple questions, very commonly, frequently asked questions by those considering embryo adoption or donating embryos. And so I encourage you to go to their website. God bless you in your work and continue to make your efforts successful each and every day, Dr. Gordon.
Thank you so much, gentlemen.
Well, it's not just God who knows that he's not a reproductive endocrinologist. I know that I'm not one either. What a fantastic story of God directing one of his sons and his daughter in a direction to make a difference in the lives of over 1,000 babies who've been born there in Knoxville. Well, you can find Dr. Gordon's books, 100 Questions and Answers About Infertility and Obstetrics, as well as his handbook, Gynecology and Infertility, a Handbook for Clinicians, on Amazon, and we will also link them in our show notes online. You know, research shows that around 9% of men and 11% of women struggle with infertility throughout their lifetimes. If you or someone you know has dealt with the disappointment of infertility, our CMDA bookstore has a couple of great resources for encouragement. Hope in the Setting of Infertility is available today more than ever, and The Infertility Companion by Dr. Sandra Glan and Dr. William Coutrer draws on the Bible and on current medical knowledge, including the latest research, to shed light on such questions as, can people of faith ethically use high-tech infertility treatments? Or how do we make moral, biblical decisions about medical treatment, third-party reproduction, stem cell research, and embryo adoption? These theologically trained authors have taught at a variety of conferences on infertility, pregnancy loss, and adoption, and they've helped thousands of couples face the future through their message of encouragement. The Infertility Companion is a book that will guide couples past the ethical pitfalls of assisted reproductive technologies as they travel the difficult road ahead. In the case of infertility, waiting seems to be a hallmark. And the book, Inconceivable, is the remarkable true life story of Shannon Woodward, a woman who stopped waiting her life away. Woodward revisits 18 years of personal frustration, pain, and anger, and speaks from her own experience to show how women can have peace in their disappointment by surrendering their hopes and their hearts, their dreams and losses, to the one who heals all things broken. You can get your copy of one or both of these books at cmda.org/store or by calling 888-230-2637 today. Well, I want to invite you to join us April 29th through May 1st for fellowship, encouragement, and spiritual renewal at the CMDA Virtual National Convention under the theme, Courage Through the Crisis, Stories from the Front Lines. This event will include lectures by notable speakers Albert Moeller, who's the president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, best-selling author Philip Yancey, who will also be my guest on CMDA Matters later in March, Alveda King, who's the niece of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and Reverend and author Bert Jones, who will be our Bible teacher. Our virtual convention will also feature breakout sessions that'll give you the opportunity to fellowship with like-minded healthcare professionals. You can find out more information and register for the national convention or any of our events online at cmda.org/events, or you can find the links that we will have in our show notes online. If you haven't downloaded our CMDA Go app yet, make sure you check it out. It is a great place to stay informed on CMDA events, as well as to connect and communicate with other Christian healthcare professionals through a variety of forums. You can also access the CMDA Learning Center on our new app, allowing you to listen to continuing education webinars on your commute or wherever you are. You can even edit your push notification settings so you'll never miss a future episode of CMDA Matters. Are you seeking help to find a practice where God can use you in amazing ways? Or maybe you're searching for an associate with a Christian perspective in healthcare like Dr. Jeff Keenan in Knoxville, who founded the National Embryo Donation Center and was linked to our guest today, Dr. John Gordon. CMDA Placement Service is a wonderful resource that brings together Christian healthcare professionals to further God's kingdom. Our placement service has a number of opportunities listed throughout the United States with entities such as hospitals independent practices, FQHCs, and various other practices in both rural, urban, and underserved communities. We assist with the placement of physicians and dentists, as well as advanced care practitioners. If you're seeking a position where you can integrate and live out your faith, or seeking an associate with similar values, please feel free to contact CMDA Placement Service at 888-690-9054, 888-690-9054. You can also register online and review opportunities on our website at cmda.org/placement. Alan Vickers and Rose Courtney, who assists him, have been placing Christians in healthcare for decades and are available for Zoom meetings with individuals or practices to discuss our service and provide counsel concerning the placement process. We would love to assist you with your search, so please contact us at CMDA today. Well, as I close, the Bible demonstrates so many examples of God's power and His sovereignty over fertility. From making a nation out of the descendants of Abraham and Sarah, and in the New Testament, granting Elizabeth and Zechariah a son named John in her old age, to sending His very own son to be born of a virgin conceived by the Holy Spirit. I hope this episode has given anyone of you listening today struggling with infertility hope and peace, and inspired other healthcare professionals to get involved in the redemptive work of guilt-free fertility practices such as those found at the National Embryo Donation Center in Knoxville, Tennessee. As God's sons and daughters, our pain and heartache matter deeply to the Father, and He tells us He listens to our prayers. He deigns to hear them. I know as healthcare professionals, being the hands and feet of Jesus to bring about His healing, it matters to you. And helping you to be equipped as a healthcare professional to answer God's clarion call matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. Well, I want to invite you to come back next week as my guest will be our very own Senior Vice President for Bioethics and Public Policy, Dr. Jeff Barrows. Our conversation will center on vaccine hesitancy. You know, we've had members reach out to us and encourage us to speak out about this vaccine hesitancy, misinformation, and a narrative about the vaccines being harmful. I hope that you will tell others about this program because you believe, as I do, that changing hearts in healthcare matters. Thanks for joining us today.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.